All right, welcome to another deep dive, folks. Today we're going to be talking about a case that I think should get a lot more attention than it does, Keyes v. Webster.
Yeah, Keyes v. Webster. I think this one has some real gems in it, especially, you know, for any listeners out there who are thinking about going into government work or employment law or anti-discrimination law. This case really does touch on all of those areas.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, it's got Fifth Amendment takings clause stuff in there. It's got due process. It's got Title VII. And, you know, at its core, it's FBI employees challenging a change in hiring practices.
Yeah. It's really fascinating to see how the court sort of threads the needle between the, you know, the perceived rights of the employees and the, you know, needs of the government to manage its workforce in a certain way.
Right. And so we're going to unpack, you know, what happened in this case, why the court decided the way it did, and then what, you know, the really important takeaways are for understanding how these areas of law interact with each other.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's start out by setting the stage right. The FBI, before 1977, had a certain way of hiring, a certain preference they gave to certain employees. What was that?
Yeah, so before 1977, the FBI had a practice, we'll call it, where they gave a special preference to their clerical and support staff when those folks applied for special agent positions.
So it was sort of like if you're already working at the FBI, you know, maybe in a support staff role, and you want to be an agent, you would get a little bit of an extra boost.
Right, exactly. And it fostered, you know, this expectation for those employees. They might have, you know, a legitimate expectation that they could rise through the ranks and become a special agent. But then in 1977, the FBI changed course. They implemented more, you know, objective selection criteria for special agents.
More strict, you know, standardized kind of selection criteria.
Right. And on top of that, they also implemented an affirmative action program that was aimed at, you know, bolstering the ranks of women and minorities as special agents.
And this is where our plaintiffs come in, right? Kedolph Keyes and a bunch of, you know, past and present FBI employees.
Exactly. They felt that this, you know, this change in policy really disadvantaged them and that, you know, their expected career trajectories within the Bureau were unfairly altered.
Right. So they sued. What were their basic legal arguments in front of the court?
Yeah. So they brought two main claims. The first being that, you know, this elimination of the special preference constituted a taking of their property without just compensation under the Fifth Amendment. The second claim that they brought was that the new hiring practices, and particularly this new affirmative action program, amounted to discrimination against them.
All right. And so the first court to hear this case, the district court, how did they rule?
So the district court kind of split the baby here. They actually ruled in favor of the employees on the takings claim. They said, yes, this was a vested contractual right that the employees had, and eliminating that was in fact a taking.
So a win for the employees on that one.
Right. But they disagreed with the employees on their second claim, the discrimination claim, and dismissed that. So of course, both sides appeal.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
You know, neither side really got what they wanted. So both sides appealed to the DC Circuit. And that's where things get really interesting, right?
Exactly.
So yeah. Let's focus on this takings claim first. It's a pretty fascinating argument. You know, they're saying that this preference that they had to become a special agent was somehow like properties that the government can't take away without, you know, paying them for it.
Right. And it really gets at, you know, the fundamental question of what constitutes property in the eyes of the Fifth Amendment.
And the D.C. Circuit ultimately disagreed with the district court. Right. They said, this is not a taking. Why not?
Right. So Judge Bazelon wrote the opinion in this case, and he articulated a principle that, you know, is actually quite simple, which is that federal employment rights are generally derived from statutes and regulations, you know, not from some implied contract.
Right. So unless Congress passes a law or an agency passes a regulation that explicitly says you get this benefit,
yeah,
it's much harder to say that you have a, you know, vested property right to that benefit.
Exactly. Yeah. And the court went on to say, you know, this special preference at the FBI, it was never actually codified in a statute or regulation. It was just, you know, a consistent practice.
Right. Right. So it was an internal policy. It wasn't, you know, like the law of the land or anything like
right.
that.
Right. Exactly. So they said, you know, because of that, the employees didn't have a, you know, legally recognized right to that preference.
I'm sure the employees pushed back on that, though, and said, well, look, this has been going on for years. We had a legitimate expectation that this was going to continue. This is almost like an implied promise. How did the court respond to that?
Yeah. So this is where the court cites to a really important Supreme Court case, Board of Regents v. Roth. And they kind of draw a distinction between due process property interests and takings clause property interests.
And remind us what Board of Regents v. Roth is all about. What are those two types of property interests?
Yeah, so in a nutshell, you know, in Roth, the Supreme Court said that to have a property interest for the purposes of due process, you have to have more than just, you know, an abstract need or desire for something. You have to have a legitimate claim of entitlement to it. And that claim of entitlement usually arises from, you know, existing rules or mutually explicit understandings.
Right. So if the government is trying to take something away from you, and you have a legitimate claim of entitlement to that thing based on an existing rule or understanding, you have a right to due process, you know, some kind of fair procedures.
Right, exactly. But having a property interest for the purpose of due process, the court said, does not automatically mean that you have property under the takings clause.
So that's a really important distinction. You might have a property interest that triggers due process, you know, fair procedures, but that doesn't automatically mean that you have a property interest that the government has to pay you for if they take it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So the court kind of analogized it, you know. They said that the employees in Kisa's might have had, you know, a legitimate claim of entitlement to the preference, meaning that the FBI probably couldn't just, you know, eliminate the preference without giving them some kind of process.
Right, like some kind of notice or a hearing or something like that.
Right. But the court said that does not mean that the preference itself was a property right under the takings clause, you know, something that the government had to compensate them for.
Right, right. And that's really because of that, you know, going back to what we said earlier, it wasn't codified in a law or regulation. Mm. It was an internal policy. And so it didn't rise to that level of being, you know, actual property.
Right. Exactly.
One more thing on the takings issue. What about the Tucker Act?
Yes. So the Tucker Act, that's, you know, a law that allows people to sue the government for money damages in certain situations.
Yeah. A lot of times when the government takes something or, you know, violates a contract, people sue under the Tucker Act.
Right. But the court said that, you know, the Tucker Act only applies when there's an express provision in a statute or regulation that, you know, provides for that monetary remedy. And again, you know, going back to this preference, it was never codified in a statute or regulation.
Right. So there's no express provision in the law that says, hey, if the FBI takes away this preference, they have to pay you for it.
Right. So no Tucker Act claim for the employees.
Got it. Okay, so the D.C. Circuit says no taking, you know, not a takings clause violation. What about the discrimination claim?
Right. So on the discrimination claim, the D.C. Circuit upheld the district court's dismissal, but for a totally different reason. And this is where it gets really important for all of our aspiring lawyers out there. This part of the opinion focuses on Title VII.
Okay. And again, just remind us what Title VII is all about.
Yeah. So Title VII is the main federal law that prohibits employment discrimination. It covers, you know, things like race, color, religion, sex, national origin.
Right. So, you know, if you're an employee and you think that you've been discriminated against on the basis of one of those protected characteristics, you can sue your employer under Title VII.
Right. But Judge Ginsburg, in her opinion for the court on this issue, you know, she made a point of saying that Title VII provides the exclusive remedy for federal employees who are alleging discrimination.
What does she mean by exclusive remedy?
So she means that if you are a federal employee and you think that you've been discriminated against, you can't just, you know, go straight to court. You have to follow the procedures that are laid out in Title VII.
Right. So Title VII has all these administrative procedures that you have to go through before you can file a lawsuit.
Exactly.
What kind of procedures are we talking about?
So the first thing that you have to do if you're a federal employee and you think you've been discriminated against is you have to file an administrative complaint with your employer, with the agency where you work.
So you can't just, you know, run to court and file a lawsuit. You got to go through your employer's internal processes first.
Right. And that gives the agency a chance to investigate the complaint and, you know, potentially resolve the issue without having to go to court.
So try to work things out internally first.
Exactly.
Okay. And so in Kisa's, the court said the plaintiffs didn't do this, right?
Right. They completely skipped over this step. They went straight to court without filing an administrative complaint with the FBI first.
So they didn't exhaust their administrative remedies. They tried to jump straight to federal court.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so the court said, you know, look, because of that, we have to dismiss your discrimination claim. Yeah. You didn't follow the procedures that are set out in Title VII.
And it's important to note, you know, they didn't even get to the merits of the discrimination claim.
Right. Yeah. They didn't say that the affirmative action program was or was not discriminatory. They just said you didn't follow the right steps, so we can't even consider your claim.
Right. It was a purely procedural issue.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. But it's interesting, you know, there is some language in the opinion where the court kind of hints that affirmative action programs that are aimed at remedying past discrimination might be permissible under certain circumstances.
Right. So they didn't say, you know, yay or nay on affirmative action, but they sort of suggested that, you know, there might be some situations where it is okay.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So we've covered a lot of ground. What are the, you know, the biggest takeaways for our listeners?
I think there are three really important things that we can take away from this case. The first is that federal employment rights are generally statutory, you know. Yeah. Unless there's a statute or regulation that creates the right, you probably don't have it.
So you can't just rely on an unwritten policy or practice. Mm. You got to look to the actual laws and regulations.
Right, exactly. Right. The second big takeaway is that there's a difference between property for takings clause purposes and property for due process purposes. You might have a property interest that gives you a right to fair procedures, but that doesn't mean that you have a property right that the government has to pay you for if they take it away.
Right. It really boils down to whether there's a law or regulation that says you have this right. And if there isn't, then it's probably not a takings clause violation.
Exactly. And the third big takeaway, and this is probably the most important one for our listeners, is that if you're a federal employee and you think that you've been discriminated against, you have to exhaust your administrative remedies before you can file a lawsuit in federal court.
Yeah, that's a big one. You know, you can't just go straight to court. You have to go through your agency's internal procedures first.
Right.
So those are three really important takeaways from Keyes's.
Absolutely.
So what does this case tell us about, you know, the relationship between government agencies and their employees?
I think it shows that, you know, federal agencies have quite a bit of discretion when it comes to managing their workforces. And it also shows that, you know, the rights of federal employees are largely defined by statutes and regulations.
So, you know, Congress and the agencies really have a lot of power to set the terms of employment for federal workers.
Right. And I think it's also worth noting that this case, you know, it's a great example of how procedural issues can sometimes be just as important as substantive issues.
Yeah. I mean, in Keyes's, the plaintiffs lost on their discrimination claim, not because the court said that affirmative action was okay, but because they didn't follow the right procedures.
Oh, exactly.
So it's really important, you know, to understand not just the substance of the law, but also the procedures that you have to follow to enforce your rights.
Mm.
All right. Well, as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave our listeners with a question to ponder. You know, given what we've just discussed about the importance of statutes and regulations in defining federal employment rights, how do you think this might affect future challenges to federal hiring practices?
Right. That's a really interesting question. You know, how will employees in the future try to push the boundaries of what's considered a protected right?
Yeah. And how will courts balance the interests of, you know, government agencies with the rights of their employees?
It's definitely something to keep an eye on.
Absolutely. All right. Well, that's it for this deep dive into Keyes's v. Webster. I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too.
Until next time, keep on learning.
Always.
All right. See ya.
See ya.